How much do you remember from 40 years ago? Specifically, 1985. And I know some of you might not have even been born yet. In a moment, we'll explain why we're asking and why it matters to us at the Defense Intelligence Agency. But first, allow us a moment for a flashback to some notable events from that year. Good memories for some and news to others. It was early 1985 when superstars from the music industry came together to raise millions of dollars for famine relief in Africa. And Back to the Future came out in 1985, too.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
And it's still a fun watch after all these years.
This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
Traveling through time was historic, but it paled in comparison to the real-life drama that was happening in the Soviet Union.
Another Soviet leader who was too old and too sick when he took power to hold on to it has died. And now a 54-year-old has taken over, someone who, theoretically at least, will be around for a generation. Get used to the name, Mikhail Gorbachev.
A new era in the Soviet-American relationship was emerging, but the same old espionage tactics still lingered.
U.S. investigators say the suspected agents were trained by Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service and were under orders to develop ties in policy-making circles. The FBI says it had been monitoring the suspects for years, noting that some had blended into the...
In 1985, spies were dropping like flies. And 85 became known as the Year of the Spy.
In the news, a summer of spy stories. The news this summer has been filled with real-life spy stories from America, the Soviet Union, and West Germany.
The Defense Intelligence Agency has a global workforce of 16,500 plus, with staff in U.S. embassies in 140 countries. Our mission is to provide military intelligence to warfighters, defense planners, and force planners in DoD and the intelligence community. So it goes without saying, though I'll say it anyway, intelligence must only be shared with those we choose to share it with. If that trust is broken, and one of our own starts working on behalf of an adversary, the consequences can be disastrous.
They can do critical damage to the United States of America. DIA is a premier intelligence organization. It has a global reputation. Everyday access that a DIA teammate may have, whether it's exquisite intelligence or products, operational matters that we're doing, any of that could lead to critical damage to the security of the United States. Make no mistake about it, this is a deadly serious business. I'm Dave Tomlinson, and I have the privilege of being the chief of the Office of Counterintelligence at the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Dave Tomlinson isn't hoping for a repeat of 1985, but he's prepared, and he joined us to discuss the crucial role of DIA's Counterintelligence Office in national security. Along with his insightful perspectives, you'll also hear segments from shows we did about two spies who worked at DIA in, you guessed it, 1985. As you'll discover, they couldn't be more different. One was an intelligence analyst who excelled at her job. Unfortunately, she was doing so on behalf of a foreign adversary.
And I can tell you that she is one of the most damaging spies the United States has ever found. After 16 years of spying on behalf of Cuba, she compromised everything, virtually everything that we knew about Cuba and how we operated in Cuba and against Cuba.
The other story is about a DIA officer who, thankfully, didn't share her work with an adversary. However, her method of gathering intel was, shall we say, a mind bender? Are you ready for this? She used her psychic abilities. It's a true story.
I'm Angela Dallafiore Ford, and I was remote viewer 079 in the Defense Intelligence Agency's program Stargate.
This is DIA Connections.
This has been a very active year for spy stories. Former U.S. Navy man.
It's not that easy to spot them. Spies don't have great big green dots in the middle of their foreheads to make it easy to identify them. They look just like you and me.
Angela always felt that she had the third eye.
I had a specialty. My specialty was known as automatic writing or channeling, and they called it written remote viewing.
I have trust and confidence in my teammates, the authorities that we have, and the ability to get after the adversary to the advantage of the United States.
Thanks for joining us on DIA Connections. We're calling this episode CI and the Year of the Spy. For most people, their knowledge of espionage comes from literature and film, and it may just be one of the most popular genres in pop culture history.
The name's Bond. James Bond.
Can you believe there's been 25 James Bond films? Dave Tomlinson is the chief of DIA's CI office. CI is the super secret spy speak for counterintelligence. Everyone has their personal favorite espionage caper, and that's true for Dave, too.
Certainly one of them that comes to mind is the Good Shepherd.
This whole wing will be your part of the world, counterintelligence.
Tom Clancy movies and books are just fantastic. Maybe more on the human side, but a little bit of counterintelligence, too.
While what we see on the big screen or read in best-selling books can feel realistic, they don't have real-life consequences. At the Defense Intelligence Agency, though, the intelligence that we gather, ranging from military and political and economic, industrial, health, and geographic data, all has far-reaching impacts, including influencing decisions made by the president. Ensuring that this intel remains secure is critical for every DIA mission, and it's the responsibility of every member of the workforce. Now, you didn't think that all we talked about with Dave Tomlinson was spy novels and movies, did you? Of course not. It was a lot more than that. Here he is with DIA historian Paul Isaacson.
Tell us a little bit about what counterintelligence actually means, and why does DIA have an entire office devoted to it?
Counterintelligence, very simply stated, is protecting your intelligence from the foreign intelligence adversaries. And it is a critical mission because when the adversary knows what you know, they are inside your decision cycle. When they're inside your decision cycle, they have the decision advantage. When our adversary has the decision advantage, they win strategic competition.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but counterintelligence isn't something that exists over by itself. It's got to be integrated into DIA's mission, every mission.
Especially in today's day and age, that's exactly correct. Counterintelligence ensures that our senior-most policymakers receiving intelligence products from the Defense Intelligence Agency are free of foreign manipulation and have that our senior policymakers have a degree of reliability in those products. And that is why DIA is a target for the foreign intelligence adversary. Our operations, our people, counterintelligence protects all of that. Our adversaries are extremely capable. It is very important to respect the capabilities of our adversaries. They're aggressive, they're sophisticated, they're good at what they do.
Let's talk for a minute about artificial intelligence. What challenges do you see coming from AI?
When I think about strategic competition, I'm not convinced that it's so much about kinetic power as it is being able to harness information faster than your adversary, make sense of it correctly in a way that's better than your adversary, and be able to action it faster. AI and quantum have the ability to accelerate certain components of that chain. So it potentially is a game changer.
Artificial intelligence is rapidly reshaping our lives. At an AI summit in Paris's Grand Palais, tech leaders from around the world exchanged ideas and shared innovations.
So protecting information as it relates to U.S. advantage, the intelligence that we have about our own AI, and the capabilities that we have being able to protect that from a counterintelligence perspective from the prying eyes of our sophisticated adversaries becomes that much more critical.
So, cutting to the chase, how do you catch a spy? Is this gut instinct? Is this computer power? Is this training? How do you catch a spy?
We have a phrase, when you see something that just doesn't seem right, report it. Especially when something is going on in one of our teammates' lives that might seem to be an indicator of intelligence activity or counterintelligence work. Those sorts of things can include unexplained influence, odd foreign trips, working weird hours, seeking access to classified information that someone would not normally have access to. Our counterintelligence professionals identify that and actually serve that person's interest to exclude them from any suspicion that might otherwise be there. If you're thinking that as a DIA officer about one of your teammates, chances are someone else is too. Especially if it's not happening, let's get to the bottom of that, which is what we do in the Office of Counterintelligence.
Reporting suspicious and uncharacteristic behavior about a highly regarded intelligence analyst ultimately led to the arrest of a former DIA employee who had provided classified intelligence to a foreign adversary. Her name was Ana Montes, and for 16 years, beginning in 1985 and lasting until 2001, she was hiding in plain sight. Here's how it unfolded. Montes joined the Defense Intelligence Agency as an entry-level research specialist. She quickly advanced to become a highly decorated intelligence analyst and a subject matter expert on Latin American affairs, particularly on Cuba. Within the intelligence community, she earned the nickname the Queen of Cuba. This is how she did it. Montes never risked taking highly classified secret documents or electronic files out of the building. Instead, she memorized details, and when she got home, she typed them from memory into her laptop. Next, she copied her typed information onto encrypted disks. Then she'd receive coded instructions via a shortwave radio she kept in her bedroom closet about where to hand over the disks to her Cuban contacts, who she would meet at restaurants in Washington, D.C. She went undetected for 11 years until 1996. That's when a coworker noticed her exhibiting enough unusual behavior to warrant an investigation. He reported his suspicions to DIA's lead counterintelligence investigator at the time, Scott Carmichael. Carmichael then arranged a meeting with Montes, which she believed to be a routine security check. But it wasn't. Here's how he described the encounter to an audience at the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C.
When she first came in, she says, "Gee, I really hope this isn't going to take a lot of time. I just named acting division chief. I have a lot of new duties. Not a problem. This won't take long." And typically that works. That usually works. But it didn't work with Ana. Even before I actually sat down at that point, she hit me with it again. She says, "Yeah, but I gotta tell you, I really am busy. I've got some other things, and I might be able to give you 20 minutes, but that's going to be about it." What I say is, "Well, great. Look, if you really don't have enough time for today, we'll just reschedule. Not a problem." So what Ana said, "Well, okay, good, good." I sat down and I thought, well, that's that. But then she hit it with me a third time. She looks at her watch and she says, "But listen, I'm out of here at 10 to 2. By this time, my frustration level is about up to here, and I've just about had it with this very assertive person. So what I needed to do is I needed to get her attention and get her to focus on my job and get her to sit down and be quiet. And so what I said to her was words to the effect of, look, Ana, this is not just a routine interview. I'm not doing a background investigation. I don't do that. I'm a counterintelligence investigator. I investigate espionage. And I have reason to believe that you might have been involved in a Cuban intelligence influence operation. I've been watching you for some time, and we need to talk about that." My objective was to get her to focus and to shut up. And boy, did that ever work. I mean, I hit her right between the eyes with it, not realizing that it was the truth. And it just stunned her. It just, pow, just like that. And of course, for the next few minutes, I was patting myself on the back. Boy, you did a good job there. You got her to be quiet. But what I didn't pick up on at the time was the fact that she never once said, no, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? What do you say? You think I did what? That's what an innocent person usually does. Anna never did that. She just sat there stunned, staring at me, studying every move that I was making, every word that was coming out of my mouth. She was so focused on me. I thought, well, I got her attention. Well, I guess I did.
Carmichael continued questioning Montez about her erratic behavior. And although he was satisfied with her answers, he still felt that something wasn't quite right.
She gave me great answers to my questions, but she left me with a nagging feeling. I mean, truly a nagging feeling. I felt that she was not just withholding something from me, but she was very concerned about it. And during the course of that interview, I developed a gut feeling that there was something wrong here I needed to pay attention to. Legally, there was no place for me to go, though. I couldn't arrest her. I had no evidence. So we just kind of let it go.
Over the next 5 years, additional inquiries were made about Montez's suspicious behavior. Then, in 2001, she was arrested for conspiracy to commit espionage.
Ms. Montez committed espionage for the Cuban intelligence service since 1985.
She would serve the next 21 years, 3 months, and 17 days in a federal prison. She was released on January 6th, 2023. How can the damaging effects of that type of betrayal be prevented? Here again is historian Paul Isaacson with Dave Tomlinson, the chief of DIA's counterintelligence office.
What would you say are the particular skills and qualifications, talents that are really valuable in a counterintelligence officer?
Probably the most valuable abilities are persistence, critical thinking, and just being curious. You're really inquisitive, and you have critical thinking skills to see and to play figuratively three-dimensional chess as to what really might be going on, and then work that as a problem that could lead to evidence of a foreign intelligence entity.
Do you look for anything specific like advanced degrees, high IQs? How do you find good people? Who are you looking for?
So people who have degrees in music or in physics or in English or political science or intelligence offerings, they can use those skills and that background to relate to some aspect of DIA's fantastic mission. And from that population, as a counterintelligence professional, we're looking for people who are curious.
You've mentioned curious as a trait, a positive trait, several times. What do you mean by a curious person? What does that mean?
It's someone who is able to look at data, at fact patterns, and wonder, what do they mean? How do they contribute to the total? What's going on here? What might also be going on here? What other points of data might I need to confirm a hypothesis, to confirm a suspicion? Being enthusiastic about discovering knowledge that could lead to the identification and the neutralization of a foreign intelligence adversary that's working against DIA and our DIA teammates.
Connecting the dots to identify a foreign adversary spying on the United States is never easy. But can you imagine how much harder it would be if it were done telepathically? That's what we believed the Soviet Union was doing during the Cold War. The intelligence community suspected that the Russians were using psychics to spy on the U.S. Naturally, we thought that if the Soviets were doing it, we should try it too. And so began a new kind of race. Not the space race, not the arms race, but the psychic race. As a result, DIA had a paranormal program. It involved the use of paranormal phenomena, primarily remote viewing, for intelligence collection. The mission for the remote viewers was to describe anything they were able to see at various locations around the world known as target sites. Seems like routine stuff, right? Except by see, I mean visualize. That is the distinction. Remote viewers used visualization to ascertain information about strategic buildings, weapons, or writings on secret documents. The objective was to foresee, prevent, and counter an enemy attack. It sounds a little out there, but it really did happen. And the program's name was Project Stargate. In 1985, some strange things were happening at DIA, and Angela Della Fiora Ford was a big part of it. She was DIA's number one psychic, considered to be the jewel of the program. We wanted to learn more about her and how she did what she did, so we paid her a visit, in person.
Hi.
Hi, Angela. Great to be with you.
Good. How are you?
Thank you for having us.
Angela welcomed DIA Chief Historian Paul Isaacson into her home for an enlightening discussion about her experiences as a remote viewer at the Defense Intelligence Agency.
So let's start by asking you, at what point in your life did you realize that you had these, I guess, special abilities?
At a very young age.
How did you know?
Because I was doing things that other people weren't.
Can you share with us just an example of something that was happening there?
Well, I would have a lot of out-of-body experiences.
Now, as I understand it, you came to realize you had a third eye?
Well, it's a third eye opening.
Tell us what it means to have a third eye.
Well, it's one of your chakra centers. Sometimes you just know things. It's more like it just comes into the body or it comes into the mind. But when the third eye opens, you see it. Information is out there and it hits the mind. It's like a mental feat. So information is out in the ethers. And so you're picking up information and it comes into the mind and then you verbally say what you're seeing.
Walk us through, very simply, what the process was that you used to do your job.
We had our desks and offices, and then there was a second building that you would walk over, and there were couches, there were big sofas, there were some beds. There were dark rooms with red lights, and it was quiet. And I would have to put myself in a self-hypnotic state where I had to go down and relax. And when you go down, you start visualizing. The person known as the monitor would give me 4, 5, 6 minutes, maybe 8 minutes. And then he would say, please access and describe the information in the sealed envelope known as Target A. So there is something in that envelope. It's either a picture, it's either a picture of a person. There could be a question, it could be just a written question, but there's something in that envelope that I need to answer. And then I would come out and I would draw pictures and write a report.
So did you have a specialty and can you give us an example of how that might have worked?
I had a specialty. My specialty was known as automatic writing or channeling. And they called it written remote viewing. If somebody was looking for something, it was good for locational work because I could tell you where something or someone was. It's better than a description. If you're looking for someone and I say, I see a tree and a mountain, well, that could be anywhere. If you're looking for someone and I can tell you a name, that's going to help you. That was my specialty.
The end of the Stargate program in 1996 didn't mark the end of Angela's intelligence career. She stayed at DIA for another 15 years, winning numerous awards while serving her country as an analyst. She even received high praise from a high-level admirer. William Cohen, former Secretary of Defense under President Clinton, wrote this about her in one of his books. Quote, "We owe her a special debt of gratitude for lifting the veil that conceals the world of the paranormal."
So looking back on your work with the Stargate program, how did you feel about your work? Were you proud of it?
Oh, yeah. I was very proud. I did what other people couldn't do.
The unorthodox way that Angela worked during the Cold War is not at all how DIA's counterintelligence team goes about things today to keep our country safe. Here's a final thought from DIA's CIA chief, Dave Tomlinson.
My DIA teammates are world-class in what they do, and they are absolutely a force multiplier when it comes to counterintelligence activity. They are trained, they are equipped, and I feel they are empowered to get after the foreign intelligence adversary. They do that within the confines of the law. They do that within the confines of protecting constitutional rights. That is a degree of comfort to me. I have trust and confidence in my teammates, the authorities that we have, and the ability to get after the adversary to the advantage of the United States.
If you'd like to learn more about counterintelligence and other career fields at DIA, check us out on dia.mil. As always, thanks for listening to DIA Connections.